Since we're about four topics behind, I was asked if we have a plan, and the answer is yes. We're not going to divulge that plan yet, but we have a plan, which includes speaking very fast. The first topic for this afternoon is a discussion of two-way communications and a requirement that was added in the proposed standard that's not in the existing auditing standard for the auditor to evaluate the effectiveness of the two-way communications between the auditor and the audit committee. Board member Bill Gradisson is going to make some introductory comments on this issue.
Thank you very much. Just one personal comment, and then I'll get right down to business. I suppose as a regulator, my job is to regulate, but I have to say I'm troubled by the philosophy behind the staff proposal, because there's nothing in this standard that an audit committee can't get now if they ask for it. Nothing. It would suggest to me that maybe the challenge here is education. I mean, perhaps we could accomplish the goal by the issuance of an audit alert or something, and then encourage the auditors to share the alert with the members of the committees and get past some of these difficulties of definition. But that's a personal thing. That's not why I was asked to start this thing off. But I do get to vote on it if I'm not replaced before we... Those comments in no way lessen the value of effective two-way communication, and it's important in assisting the auditor and the audit committee in understanding significant matters, however we define them, related to the audit. On matters of material misstatements or concerns about accounting and auditing matters, the discussion might contribute to audit quality. I have been struck by the discussion so far. I think I'm the first one to use the term audit quality. I may have missed something earlier, but since that's what we're in the business of encouraging, I think that might be even be a significant observation. The board included a requirement in the proposed standard for the auditor to evaluate the adequacy of the two-way communication between the auditor and the audit committee, to emphasize that effective two-way communications are beneficial to achieving the objectives of the audit. I think it's kind of striking that our goal is effective two-way communications, but we're going to do this without two-way evaluation. The evaluation of the audit committee is going to be made by the auditor, but nothing is coming back the other way. Now, there's a reason for that, because that's up to the SEC. That's not within our purview. But it has led me to think that since our role is limited to the auditor side and the SEC's very comprehensive role includes not only oversight and approval of whatever we do, but also the role with regard to the issuer, the board, the audit committee, I have wondered whether we would be better off in the long run if this project moves forward, if it were done jointly with the SEC. In other words, if they were moving something parallel that had to do with the responsibilities of the audit committee, for example, evaluating the communication from the audit committee's point of view, which we can't do, at the same time we were doing it from the other direction. In any event, the purpose of the upcoming discussion is to seek feedback from all of you regarding the importance of effective two-way communication and how and or whether these requirements before us should be modified to support the objectives of the audit.
Thanks, Bill. And there were some questions to that in that regard in the briefing paper, which pretty much went to what Bill has just said, and that is how important is effective two-way communications to the audit committee's responsibility and the oversight of the audit. If it is important, how can the requirements and the proposed standard be modified to promote effective two-way communication? Additionally, considering that the PCAOB does not have oversight of audit committees, what other ways can the board promote effective two-way communication without being able to impose requirements on the audit committee? I should add that when we were thinking about proposing this as a standard, we had a discussion with our SAG, and the SAG felt that promoting effective two-way communications was a very important part of any standard we might put out. So that was certainly in our thought processes as we issued this proposed standard. Some of the other questions are, how could the requirement for the auditor's evaluation of whether the communications with the audit committee have been adequate be modified to support the objectives of the audit? And finally, which came up in some of the comments, should the auditor's evaluation of effective two-way communications be expanded to include an evaluation of the communications between management and the audit committee? Bob Kippers, I think you're going to begin the discussion here.
Yeah, thanks, Marty. And I don't want to alarm the group, but I've actually been thinking about this. Let me just remind you quickly what the paragraphs 26 through 28 require. And it's under the rubric of adequacy of two-way communications, as we just teed up. But as you go through it, to Board Member Gradison's point, this is really a one-way evaluation. It does not require any evaluation of the audit committee of how well the auditor is communicating. So it leads me to believe that the entirety of it will rest on the auditor's perception of whether they're getting the information they need to complete the objectives of their audit, of their examination. And if you take it the full distance through paragraph 28, it goes to, okay, what happens if the communications have not been adequate? And it tees up a couple possibilities: communicating with the full board, perhaps a scope limitation in your opinion, or the ultimate vote with your feet, withdrawing from the engagement. As I look at this and just take the construction of those paragraphs and forget the title for a minute, this actually works pretty well if you change it to say, consequences on the engagement of inadequate audit committee communication. In other words, what is an auditor to do if they're not getting the engagement they need from the audit committee? Either they're unwilling to talk about fraud risks, they're withholding information that you somehow, through your corroboration, find out was an issue that they were aware of. All of these things would be very concerning to an auditor. If that were, I know that's not your objective in the standard, Marty, but if that were the title of the section and you did a little tweaking, it would all make sense to me. You know, these are the kinds of things you'd look at. If you become aware that you're not receiving adequate communication from your client, from the audit committee, there are consequences of that, and these are the steps you might take. And the first one, while it's viewed as an option or should consider, to me would be mandatory, as it would if I were having difficulty with management, is to communicate with the full board. To me, that's step number one. If the audit committee is not working with you, next place I go is the full board. If management wasn't working with us, the first place I go is the audit committee. And I don't think that should, I think that's absolutely necessary. Now, where it goes from there could ultimately determine whether you ever get to an opinion, whether you have to modify your opinion, or hopefully you would resolve the issue. My point is, as I look through all the comments from some analyses, I saw, investor comment letters, auditors, corporate governance folks on boards. I really didn't see any group that embraced this as a meaningful additional element. But it might be helpful, from an auditor's standpoint again, if there was some specificity about consequences once you concluded. I mean, you might have some indicia of inadequate communications and say, if you conclude they're not adequate, then these are the things you either must do or should consider. So as I looked at this, it struck me that this really had little to do about two-way communications, and the most important thing is, what's the end of the story on my engagement if there's this problem?
Thank you, Bob. And Karen Hastie-Williams.
Thank you. As important is for the board to make an evaluation about a particular issue, you're hearing one perspective from the person making the presentation, but do you see other issues and do you want some feedback from other parts of the corporation or the company that you're dealing with? And I think that's something that audit committees should feel open to raise issues and to get as much information as they can. And whether it comes from the external auditor or internal auditor, I think that the issue is you want your board to have as much information as they can absorb with respect to an issue. And I agree with you that if you're not getting cooperation from particular individuals or officers in the company, then you go to the CEO and say, look, this is important to us. We need to get this information. So I think that's the way that I would interpret that.
I'm sorry, Linda Griggs.
Thank you. I find this part of the standard very confusing. The release talks about the promotion of effective two-way communications as a goal, but then paragraph 3 tees up this evaluation of the audit committee. And I'm confused about how this effectiveness of the audit committee two-way communication relates to internal control over financial reporting. There's a very effective mechanism, it seems to me, for the evaluation of the audit committee's oversight or the board when there's no audit committee through the audit of ICFR. Now, I recognize with Dodd-Frank we've got a slightly different issue there, and I don't know, I haven't thought through how it would affect small businesses, but it does seem to me that the mechanism now in place to evaluate oversight is an appropriate one. If, in fact, there's a concern about the effectiveness of two-way communications, does that mean that there is a material weakness in internal control over financial reporting? If so, I'd like to see AS5 revised. I think AS5 should provide the guidance. If, in fact, we now think that rather than the audit committee's role being incidental, which is the way Auditing Standards 380 talks about the audit communications as being incidental to the audit, we now think these two-way communications are critical, then I think we need to be a little bit clearer about that in the standard. I think the standard should be to promote effective two-way communications. I agree completely with Bob. If there is a problem with those communications, the auditor needs to go immediately, as soon as he discovers the problem, to the board of directors. If the board of directors doesn't do something, then I think, you know, the consequences are you've got ineffective internal control, because clearly there is not an oversight mechanism to the financial reporting process, and then maybe the auditor needs to resign because they can't be comfortable with that they can even conduct an audit. But I think the consequences, I think that the consequences laid out in paragraph 28 are really not the focus that the standard should have. I think the standard should be focused on promoting this communication, and if there's a problem, have a discussion. And maybe actually I was wrong. Maybe the first discussion is the auditor sits down with the audit committee and says, look, we don't think we're really getting this free flow of discussion. We think that's the best way to assure that the financial reporting process works first. So that's really the first step. If that doesn't work, then you go to the board. If that doesn't work, all right, then there isn't effective oversight, it seems to me. But I do think we need to somehow integrate AS5 with this standard if you're going to leave the effectiveness in here, because I just think it's very confusing. Is this yet another standard? Is this the same as AS5? Thanks.
Thanks, Linda, for those comments. let me just make a brief comment, and then I want to pass it on to Barbara. I think your points are good ones and raise interesting challenges for us as we look at the standard. I think, as I said in my opening comments, it clearly was a strong point from our standing advisory group that this standard promote effective two-way communications. So an interesting comment I'll be glad to be trying to hope to hear from others would be, are there other ways in which this standard might be able to promote effective two-way communications other than the manner in which we've done it in the standard so far? So be interested in further comments in that regard. Barbara, maybe you could just comment very briefly on the intersection between this and NAS 5.
Sure. Thank you, Marty. Yeah, just to follow up, I guess in the SAS view, this requirement is more narrow than the assessment of the control environment that the auditor would do as part of an integrated audit in AS 5. The standard does refer the auditor back to AS 5 if the auditor were to determine that the communications haven't been adequate. For this standard, it's really just a part of your overall assessment in AS 5. Just a couple other points to note. This standard would apply to all audits, whether they would be integrated audits or audits of smaller issuers that would not be subject to AS 5. So this really, I think, is not anywhere near the full scope of AS 5.
Thanks, Barbara. George Munoz?
Thanks, Marty. In terms of another alternative, I would say that, first of all, promoting two-way communication is crucially important. So another way is to simply, if you want to put a standard on the auditors, simply require the auditors to request an executive session at the audit committee, period. And in that executive session, then the auditor should do all of the best practices, all of the kinds of things that are important, because in that way, that's the only time that's one way that the auditor can force issues, bring up issues, and see the reaction or the like. Instead of this other way, which I think is more complicated. So let me address a few things that are in this communication. But before I do, I don't get many opportunities to speak to the PCAOB. So let me expand on this opportunity. I actually look at PCAOB as a very good check mechanism for the audit committees. That is, if the audit committees know that somebody's auditing the auditors, that is, that the auditors are meeting high levels of certification, qualification, training, education, that there's competition in the profession, that there's more people in the pipeline, that the schools are teaching the right things, that's great for the audit committee. Somebody's taking care of that. We know it's not the SEC. We know it's not the Congress. We know it's not everything else. But the PCAOB, to me, is a wonderful opportunity. So the reason why this is relevant is because I have to gauge the priorities and importance of what's before us against what I, as from the audit committee, would look to. For example, IFRS, the position that PCAOB it has to speak up on IFRS. It has to, because that is going to affect how audits are done and what is looked for and the like, and therefore, to me, that's a higher priority. I'm not saying you're not, but I'm just saying I would hope that this kind of conference is held on that. On competition, there's only four major companies. I would love to have the PCAOB speak to, is there enough competition in there so that we have more auditors to work with? Are they prepared? Are they well trained? Are the colleges teaching what they're doing? So in that context, as I look at this rule, I say, all right, so now we're putting a standard out there. Is this the kind of thing that I expect the PCAOB to give some precedence to? I look at item number 10 in communications, which is, let me get to it. 10 says, the auditor should communicate the following matters to the audit committee. That means I'm going to have to put it on the agenda, or it's going to take up time. And here's item number A, the auditor's determination of whether persons with specialized skill or knowledge are needed for the audit. Well, of course, I would hope that the auditor is always going to use a special skill, special person, but he doesn't have to take up the audit committee's agenda time to tell us that he's going to call on some special skill. He's got us. We look to the auditor to do that. The second item is, and this is on the agenda again, the auditor's consideration of and plan use of the company's internal audit function. That's a judgment call. These are things that are now the PCAOB is requiring that there be communication on. So is that the two-way communication? I'm sorry, but it doesn't rise to the level of importance for what that audit committee's fiduciary responsibility is. I go to item number 15, and it says management consultations with other accountants. When the auditor is aware that management consulted with other accountants about auditing or accounting matters is a lot, the auditor should communicate to the audit committee his or her views about significant matters that were the subject of such consultation. Why? I don't see the relevance unless the auditor thinks that a particular discussion maybe is of relevant, but this requires that they do it pretty much regardless of whatever they consider to be significant. So if these were not requirements but rather considerations, I would be supportive of it. So then I go to your question, which is 26. In paragraph 26, it requires that somehow the auditor evaluate this two-way communication, and that evaluation is going to be in writing, it's going to be the like, and it's almost like the audit committee is the one who's hiring, if you will, engaging the auditor, and yet the auditor is going to, quote, report on the audit committee. I wonder what how that plays in people's minds, because that auditor is going to be writing some report card, if you will. And I don't know if that's the way it should be. I'd like the audit committee to be writing the report card on the auditor, and I'm not sure that it should work the other way around. Not to say that that's not relevant. So I would say I would substitute all of this with one standard that says auditors, in any case where any of these things exist, should request an executive session with the audit committee and speak to that issue.
Thanks, George. Don Nicolaisen?
I think when you get to the area of effective communication, it's a tough area. I think of the businessman who wants a one-page memorandum that cuts to the chase of what's important, what are the decision points, and what do we need to deal with. I think of the general that gave a 28-page memo to his superior that had a covering comment that said, I'm sorry, this memo is 28 pages. I didn't have time to reduce it to one. What we've been talking about today is very complicated communications from the auditor to the audit committee that goes on for pages and pages and pages. Typically, of the ones that I see, they're 50 to 100 pages. Not all of that is of equal importance. Not of all of it I would think of as conveyance of communications or effective communications. And so I think part of the problem starts there of how do you have effective communication if one of the requirements is a bookload of information that gets dumped on the audit committee with a view that that's the communication from the auditor. Now is the communication back from the audit committee something that can be effectively evaluated? I watch my son, and his buddies will come over. One of them will look up, three of them will grunt, and they'll all go because they know exactly what they're going to do. I see my son talk to his girlfriend for hours, and then I see his girlfriend come to mom and say, I'm not sure we're communicating. And so what is effective communication? How do you get there and how do you measure it? And if you're asking this party that writes 50-page documents, is the communication from the other side effective? I'm not sure they're the right people to be asking that question. And then you get into, well, should we have somebody who's actually a moderator who can help the audit committee talk to the auditor? And I don't think we want to go there. So my view is pretty much, I think, what I've heard others express. Effective communication is necessary, it's desirable, should be encouraged, but I don't think you can write rules that say, if you do this, this, and this, you've had effective communication, because I think you can still fail miserably.
Thanks, Don. Mike Cook?
Marty, thank you. I just maybe a little bit along the lines of what Don was suggesting, but then I have a question also at the end. I'm kind of the same place. I could see putting a requirement in place for the auditors to obtain an evaluation of their effectiveness as communicators from the audit committee. I don't quite understand why we would empower and through a standard require auditors to evaluate the effectiveness of somebody else communicating with them. in the ordinary sense. I can understand if there's a breakdown, you need to talk to people and you need to have open dialogue, and I'm all in favor of promoting communication. It'd be un-American not to be in favor of promoting communication, but if the burden is on anybody here, we ought to put the burden on the firm to obtain an evaluation of its effectiveness, not the other way around. And I think this is just ass backwards, excuse the friend. And I mean, and I don't think it's going to be effective. And it's another requirement added on top of others that I don't think is going to stimulate better things, but it will certainly take more time, more cost, and I don't know what you get at the end of the day. I did have one question, however. What we have here all seems to be talking about communication in a non-litigious, non-threatened environment, and that is the way the world should be 98% of the time. But when you get into special investigations and matters of that type, you get into some very tricky issues of privilege, issues of timing of public disclosure, and there are times when it's appropriate for there to be two-way communication, and there are other times when people are not free to have two-way communications in advance of other things taking place. I don't know if you can make that distinction if you choose to retain this notion, but somewhere it ought to say that these broad and general rules about evaluating communication, and if you don't get back what you want, you do what Bob Koepper said you're going to do. You think about whether you have to quit and all those kind of things. Some of those rules don't work well in a special investigation type situation where the audit committee is working with outside counsel and there's counsel engaged for the audit committee itself, not for the company, not for other people, and not for the purpose of informing the auditors. And the audit committee understands you got to keep them informed. You can't shut them out, but you don't just invite them in to these highly private sessions prematurely. And so I don't know if you can make that distinction, but somewhere this can't be just a general rule that says Bob Koepper should come visit me in the midst of a special investigation and tell me he wants to know everything that's going on, because that doesn't work. And Bob would be, having been involved in a number of them, he'd be the first one to recognize it.
Thanks for those clear and unambiguous comments, Mike. next, we have Alex Mendel.
Well, ditto to Mike, frankly. He took the words right out of my mouth. I think it is backwards, candidly. I mean, we talked about the three-legged stool earlier and the balance of that, the necessary balance of the three-legged stool, and I think this would actually, you know, throw it off balance, would offset that balance in a way that could actually impair or impede the communications that are so important. And I fully agree. I mean, communications between those two groups are critical, and if they don't go well, you know, something has to happen. There's no doubt about that. You know, the governance committee can get involved if something doesn't go right. I mean, there are some other means, but to have the authority for the auditor to give a report on the audit committee, which has implications, you know, of various kinds, I think is throws the whole system out of balance, and is I would urge us not to do that.
There's a number of other cards up, but I would want to ask a question. Maybe Bob Kippers or Sam possibly could add some insight into this. If you can't, then I'll continue with the rest of the cards. But this is a requirement in the international standards on auditing under the IAASB. Communications with audit committees has this same requirement. I'm wondering, can you shed any light as to whether this is working in any effective way on audits outside U.S. jurisdictions where this requirement exists already, or not?
That's clearly a Sam Renzilla question.
I don't have an answer to either of those. I have not, Marty. I would couch this with, it's a question I did not ask in either helping our guys prepare a response or preparing for today, I have not heard any noise out of the system that would lead me to believe that this has been a significant issue. I think it's important to recognize. I don't dispute any, and quite frankly, I don't feel real strongly on this particular whether it's in or it's out, because auditors already today are required under AS5 to consider the effectiveness of an audit committee in its assessment as to whether or not internal controls are effective. This is just one slice of the effectiveness of an audit committee. But already that system exists where an auditor is making an assessment. And quite frankly, when AS2 came out, we had some chuckles thinking that's going to work really well. Those are going to be some interesting conversations if you determine the only material weakness your client has are the people you're delivering that message to. So, I don't think that has been an impediment to effective communication. And again, I mean, we believe audit committees are really important in the conduct of our audits, and I don't think that's gotten in the way of it. So I'd be happy to get back with you with an answer. Unfortunately, I won't be able to share it with everybody, but I'd be happy to follow up on that if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Because again, like in other aspects of this, trying to get further information about how it's working elsewhere or what other things are working is always useful to know. But as you point out very appropriately, AS5 does require the auditor to evaluate the audit committee in connection with internal control of a financial reporting, and this is, if you will, an element of that. Bob Dore?
It just strikes me as we're having this discussion that perhaps evaluating effectiveness of two-way communication really is somewhat of a fancy way of asking for two separate evaluations. It seems to me that the audit committee needs to evaluate whether or not they are receiving the information they need from the auditors, and I don't think there's much argument about that. At the same time, as an auditor, I don't think it's inappropriate for an evaluation to be made of whether the audit committee is responsive and provides the auditor information that may be relevant to the conduct of the audit going forward. I'm not sure that's all wrapped up in something we can call effective two-way communication, but perhaps if there was more of a spin to it, of both parties need to evaluate whether or not the information required to discharge their individual responsibilities are being obtained, that information is being obtained throughout the engagement, would be a better way to go about it. For example, in Mike's situation with the ongoing special investigation, one could argue that if Mike responded that he couldn't discuss something, that we had not had effective two-way communication. But I think what's more relevant is that the auditor understand the ramifications to the conduct of the audit and the outcome from Mike being in the position that he is at that current time as an audit committee member. So I wonder if there's a way that we could accomplish, I think, what we're all aiming to get at here without trying to wrap it around something that's as nebulous as sons talking to girlfriends and trying to evaluate whether communication has been effective or not.
Thank you. There's two more cards up. That is part of our grand plan to get back on schedule. If we can limit the discussion on this particular question to the two cards that are up, Joan Wagoner and then finally Lynn Turner. Thanks.
Oh, thanks very much, Marty. I think in terms of our practice and the smaller company practice, the issue really kind of drills down what would be on our big wish list here. Our big wish list basically is to understand or to have the audit committee understand is, do they feel that it is their responsibility if they become aware of something that affects financial reporting or the internal controls over financial reporting, that they have an obligation to share that with the external auditors? And in my view, I think they do. I think most people would agree that they do. I don't know that all audit committees feel that way, especially in the smaller companies. So that is my big focus in terms of evaluating two-way communication, or the one big thing that I would like to see a bit more solidly placed in terms of a communication between the audit committee and the external auditor. Thank you.
Good, thanks. And Lynn?
Marty, I think the correct term for this is an upward evaluation, and companies like General Electric have used upward evaluations for years very successfully. I have twice on audit committees of public entities used an evaluation where we not only evaluated the auditor, but we actually had the auditor do a formal evaluation of the audit committee. And at the start of the audit each year, everyone knew that we'd be evaluating them, and we also told them they'd be evaluating us, so we asked them to take a look at what we're doing, and if we weren't doing things right or could do it better, we'd want to know about that, and the evaluation provided them an opportunity to do that. In both those instances, it actually had a very significant positive impact on the communication between the two sides, and actually probably impacted the timing of that communication and brought some of it forward, if you will. So I've found from my experience where we've actually done these type of evaluations, it has been very positive. I also think that an auditor, the audit committee just plays a phenomenally important role in the financial reporting process. There's just no question about that, no denying that. And with that, the audit committee oversees not just the auditor, but that audit committee oversees the internal auditors, oversees the financial management that we've all talked about, and is a critical, very important control here. And if you're an auditor, I look at these four questions, and the actual standard says the auditor is just going to evaluate. It doesn't say you're going to issue any type of special report. So all it does is say the auditor is going to go evaluate that extremely important piece of the overall control. And it's not just to do with the audit, but it's to do with some other very significant parts of the financial reporting process. And I look through the four questions: appropriateness and timeliness of actions taken by this very important audit committee, the openness of it to communicate with the auditor. I mean, the audit committee will not communicate with them. I as an auditor, probably have some grave concerns. The willingness and capacity of the audit committee to meet with them in executive session. If they won't do that, there's got to be a problem. These are very plain Jane, very simple, basic things that are not that difficult. And the fourth question, the extent to which the audit committee probes issues raised by the auditor. I, you know, as an investor, I certainly hope the audit committees are doing that. If not, we're probably wasting some of our money on those board of director fees. So they're very simple things, and it just says the auditor's going to go through and evaluate those things and come to a conclusion about where that very significant control is working adequately or not. And so to say there's an issue with that, I think tells you just from a common sense perspective, we're missing something in the system. And if we're so worried as audit committee members about the auditor looking at those things, then there's probably a bigger issue here that we don't have on the table. So I think what's here is fine. I've done it before, and it's worked well. And if anything, it enhanced and brought the communications to an earlier stage and was very beneficial for us on the audit committee, and I think benefited the auditor as well. So I think it's a very, very solid, very simple, very easy thing to do, and something that as an auditor, I can't comprehend how you wouldn't do it anyway.
Did you do the did you do it more than 1 year, or is it just a 1 year deal?
Yeah, the way we actually started this out, the first time I did it was when I was a CFO, Hal. And to Don's question, I wanted to find out if the auditor thought this was really a good audit to work on. So I required that the auditor, including the staff that actually had to work on the audit, the junior staff even, to fill out an evaluation. You never know. You know, when you do that, you're sitting here going, am I setting myself up just to get the bejesus beat out of me or not? But if it was, I wanted to know. And I figured it was better to manage the issue and know about it if there was one rather than not know it. So we did it for several years as the CFO. And then on the audit committee, yeah, we did it each year then. It just became part of the evaluation process. And after the first year, what I found was that butterfly feeling in your stomach about how this is going to turn out after the first year, and I did have those concerns, it always went away. The communication just became very natural. You know, it just, no one gave it a second thought after that. It just became part of what you did.
Thanks, Lynn. One more comment from
I just want to ask one question. At least the audit committees that I'm on, there's a client satisfaction process that goes both ways, which is maybe not as direct as this, but it is more comprehensive, deals with all the issues and tends to surface things, and there's no mention of that any place. Is that, I just wouldn't, if you have a process that works and it's effective, I'm not sure that you need to introduce another one, and at least if that's done comprehensively, you might want to, at least in here, if you decide to go ahead with a requirement, that you acknowledge there may be other ways to accomplish the same objective.
Great, thank you very much.
The only point was there ought to be some mutuality on how this process works, and I guess what you're describing is a mutual process, but what this says, at least the way I read it, this is a one-way process, and that was my main concern with the OHG stuff here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate a lot of very constructive input on a interesting topic that was introduced into this standard that was not in the existing standard. So thank you for all of the good feedback. Another topic where we had a lot of comments again was whether communication should be written or oral. And again, this was led by a lot of discussions at our SAG meeting, again, with some very strong views from our SAG members about this topic. So Jennifer, why don't I turn this to you?
Yes, thank you, Marty. Actually, I'm going to turn it over to Dan Geltzer, who's agreed to provide some opening remarks.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. Like the existing standards, the board's proposal would allow the auditor, with a few exceptions, to choose between written or oral communication of the information that he or she is required to communicate to the audit committee. And as Jennifer suggested, we did ask for comment on whether that was the appropriate approach. Views were quite sharply split. While there were exceptions, I would say that in general, auditors favored the idea of continuing their flexibility to choose between written or oral communication. On the other hand, audit committees and investors tended to support the idea that the required communication should be in writing. The proponents of written communication argue that writing provides a record that permits committee members to refer back to what was communicated and avoids the risk of future disputes or misunderstanding. Writing, we were told, it's also a more effective way to communicate complex information about topics like critical accounting estimates. Moreover, people pointed out that written communication is more efficient since committee members can consider the information at any time and then use their time at committee meetings with the auditor to ask questions. In contrast, those who urged flexibility pointed out that a choice between written and oral communication allows the auditor to determine what's going to work best based on the facts and circumstances and what will best lead to open communication. In some cases, oral communication may also be more consistent with candor, and oral communication minimizes the risk that points will simply be communicated as boilerplate in writing. So we're hoping that the roundtable will give us some insight into how we ought to resolve this split in views. I would point out that all communications that are required would have to be memorialized in the work paper, so there would be a record of what was communicated from a work paper perspective. But beyond that, whether the communications themselves should be written or oral, appreciate your views on what would be most effective. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. We have three discussion questions here, and these questions are intended to probe further, trying to get behind the reasons. If you think it should be in writing, what are those reasons? Or orally, if it's made orally, then what are the reasons to continue with that? So let me go through the questions, and we'll get into the discussion. First one is, should all matters be communicated by the auditor to the audit committee, be in writing, or only certain matters? If only certain matters should be communicated to the audit committee in writing, what are those matters? And this is getting the last one. What are the risks of allowing some of the communications to be made orally? So if you're in the camp that you believe all communications should be in writing, why do you have that? What risk do you perceive would be out there if some of them are made orally? Next question. So if the standard required all communications to be in writing, should the auditor document oral discussions that relate to such written communications? So we've heard today about robust dialogue and open discussions. If you're someone that believes everything should be in writing, then what's your view on those open, robust dialogue? Does that mean that the auditor should go back and document exactly what was said in those oral discussions? Is that what you're intending as well, if you believe everything should be in writing? Next question. If all required communications to the audit committee were required to be in writing, would there be any effect on the dialogue between the auditor and the audit committee? Would the dialogue on key matters continue to be robust? In other words, would those discussions still be open and frank? Or would there be some concern, if I've got to document everything, then you might not want to have pass along something that you think is a harsh evaluation, but it for fear because it's in writing or how that might be interpreted. So would there be any effect? Would it chill, if you will, some of the conversations if everything you said needed to be in writing? Ask Diane Nikolaisen to provide some opening views to open up the discussion, and then we'll open up to everyone. So, Don?
Great. I think the issues have been well described, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your comments. And I'm somewhat indifferent whether the communication is in oral form or writing for the most part. But when you come to a standard that requires all significant communication to be documented, and part of it is shared, documented, this to me means you've written it. And so if you've written it down and you share only a portion of that written piece with the audit committee, and then another portion is maintained somewhere else and the audit committee is not aware that those things were considered significant by the auditor because they were communicated in a different format and perhaps the writing was different than the actual discussion took place. I could imagine situations where certain people are tepid about raising difficult issues, but they're not hesitant to put in a memo that I raised it and I discussed it, even though it might have been very cryptic in its explanation. And so that's my primary concern with this, and I'll leave it with that.
Thank you, Don. I don't see any other 10 cards, but we did get significant views. Here's Linda. Linda Griggs.
I just had a question. I mean, what are you contemplating PCAOB would need to then be documented in the work papers? I guess I need to understand what the purpose for that documentation is, and would that have to be very extensive, or is it just we had a discussion about the CFO's transgressions and that would be it? I mean, how detailed would that then have to be? What the standard says, it's to enable an experienced auditor to understand that communications were made to comply with the provisions of the standard. Well, it might be enough to just say we had this very difficult discussion. But if it has to get into the details, then I guess I'm with Don. I'd want to know what those details were. If it's going to be written down, it seems to me that's something the audit committee should be aware of.
Well, I'll take a shot at responding to that. Again, we had lengthy discussions at the SAG meeting, and many of the SAG representatives thought that requiring all communications to be in writing would stifle some of the natural dialogue that takes place among the auditor and the audit committee. And so in drafting this, we decided to permit the matters to be communicated either in writing or orally. However, we felt that certainly from an inspection perspective, if nothing else, if the communications were made orally, we would have no idea whether or not the communications were made or what they might be. And so we established a requirement that if they are made orally, they would at least have to be documented to the extent that somebody, an experienced auditor, having no previous connection with the engagement, could understand the communications in sufficient detail to know essentially what would be communicated if the required communications were made in writing. So the essence would be they could be made in writing, or if for one reason or another, if the committee and the auditor decided that some of the communications would be made orally, that we at least felt that the substance and the importance of that still needed to be documented in the auditor's work papers such that we could understand that the objectives of this standard were met by being able to read that documentation. Now, I understand the point that Don's raising is, well, then I, as an audit committee member, if you didn't send me the written report, well, then maybe send me the memorandum that went to your files, because I might not agree with how you characterize them, I think is the issue here.
If I could also add, I think when we were drafting that language, we were also considering the fact that the engagement quality reviewer needs to be able to determine that the engagement team has complied with the standard, and these are matters that are very important for that reviewer maybe to be aware of also.
Well, and I also just want to point out that the way our standard is drafted now, that if it's made orally, then you document your work papers, that exists in the standard today. So that isn't a new concept that we would be auditing. The auditors have that today.
Lisa Gaynor?
A few years ago, I took part of this research synthesis team, and we were asked to address this very issue as to which these questions, and look to the academic literature to see what had been done. And what we had discovered is nothing had been done in this area, specifically in accounting and auditing. However, we did make the statement that in communication, and there's called communication richness theory. And here we keep talking about oral versus written, and we've heard throughout this morning that there's so much information that's put in writing, the reports are 50 to 100 pages, that clearly we don't want to add more written information just so it's documented. But if you go to theory would say that we should be talking not necessarily about oral versus written, but about the richness of a communication versus the leanness of the communication. So you've got the distinction here may be between effectiveness and the efficiency of a communication. More complex, I mean, it's pretty simple, more complex thoughts and messages should be in a richer format. And a richer format isn't necessarily, it's usually face-to-face where you can see expressions, as you were saying, that as Don was saying, that we discussed this during a meeting, and then they go to they kind of just like skirted the issue in the meeting, but then they get into the documentation stage. And so a rich format would include both a face-to-face or an oral, if that's how you choose to call it, as well as a written format as well, or just even including the face-to-face. It's not even just oral, because you get into looking at people and seeing expressions and making your own intuitions from there. So more complex, more rich, less complex, meaner. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Lynn Turner?
Marty, on the committees I've sat on, we have asked auditors give it to us in writing, and they've used graphs, or it's taken various forms, whatever worked best for everyone involved. So I think you got to give flexibility to that. Some of this can be graphed better than it can in just a written word. So I'm a big fan of putting it in writing. I get very nervous about the point that Don raised about something sitting in the audit work papers about me as the audit committee that I've never seen before that talks about what they were telling me in a conversation. I there's just something about that I don't like. And so I'm a strong supporter of having it in writing. The Blue Ribbon Panel Committee on Audit Committees recommended this type of stuff be in writing, and there was actually some language in it that I think is very good that I'd suggest you consider. It says this requirement should be written in a way to encourage open, frank discussion and to avoid boilerplate. And I think having a sentence in there like that, even if you leave it optional, is very good to put that in there, because I think that's what you're trying to get at.